then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, tell me why you hurry so. Hush, you vocal, hush and listen, and his cheeks were all aglow. I bear orders from the captain, get you ready quick and soon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, for the pikes must be together by the rising of the moon. Oh, then tell me, Sean O'Farrell, where the gathering is to be, in the old spot by the river, right well known to you and me. One more roar for signal token, whistle up the marching tune, for your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. By the rising of the moon, by the rising of the moon, put your pike upon your shoulder by the rising of the moon. Out from many a mud walled cabin eyes were watching through the night, many a man big chest was throbbing for the blessed warning light. Farmers passed along the valleys like the man she's lonely crew, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon. At the rising of the moon, at the rising of the moon, and a thousand blades were flashing at the rising of the moon.
Greetings from the Northwest Homeland, comrades. It's February the 1st, 2018. I'm Harold Covington, and this is Radio Free Northwest. Right, I got an email a few days ago of a kind I've often gotten down through the many years of my association with this thing of ours and all its many eccentric manifestations. It was a whatever happened to so-and-so query. Now, I won't go into details, but the answer I was forced to give the comrade who was asking was the same as I've had to give in the majority of such cases, which is that I actually don't know what happened to so-and-so. I had, in fact, met this guy a couple of times in person, which isn't always the case, but he responded less and less to the stuff that I was sending him, and one day a couple of years ago, he just went dark, and I never heard from him again. Now, there's a number of guys like that who used to be on our contact list that I'd love to get back in touch with. Valuable people, or at least good supporters while they were around, but I have no idea whatever happened to them. They may be dead, or in prison, or on the run from the collection agencies of the ex-wife's lawyer, or Scotty may have beamed them up to the Enterprise, I just don't know. Sometimes they get curious again, and they reappear after years with some plausible story as to why they just had to vanish into thin air. Although sometimes they don't even bother with that. They're like the husband who tells his wife that he's going out for a pack of smokes and then disappears for 6 or 8 years, and one night he walks back into the house, hangs up his hat, and asks what's for dinner. The first thing you need to bear in mind is that the comments I'm going to make here apply not just to the Northwest Front, but to every single white nationalist group I have ever been associated with and every group I've ever even heard of. One of the primary problems that white nationalism of every tendency has is turnover. It is staggering in some groups in the 90 percentile annually, although none of my outfits have ever been that bad. Internet loosey-goosey has made it impossible even to quantify turnover realistically. So far as I'm aware, it's one of the few universal rules about white nationalist life that seems to be ironclad and applicable to everybody without exception. With a little flair and a lot of hard work, we can draw a crowd, so to speak. We can get people in the door, but we can't keep them. White people come into one of our groups full of enthusiasm and piss and vinegar. They're here now. Stand aside, because they're going to show us all how it's done. They're going to move mountains and cast the Jews and the Munkoids into outer darkness. They're going to storm the barricades like some piece of 19th century art and unwind the bloody flag of revolution and freedom in the breeze on the ruins of the old order, yada, yada, yada. Then they get in and they find it's not what they're looking for. And so they wander off in search of other stimulation. The key phrase, of course, is that these people, quote-unquote, don't find what they're looking for, and we'll discuss what they're looking for in a bit. But here is where I once again have to say some things that are going to get everybody all pissed off and sulky and resentful. But like I've said, my duty station in the movement is to say the things that no one else will say out loud. The core of our white nationalist turnover problem is the weak and brittle character of modern-day white people, which has been socially engineered into us since the baby boom generation. Bluntly put, the average white American, born from about the end of World War II onward, has the attention span of a housefly. Europeans seem to be a little bit better, but not much, and they've degraded even more than we have in the past 20 years. The IRA and the Yugoslavs seem to be the last Europeans outside Russia who remembered how to fight at all, and now they've become more or less domesticated as well. I've read that this generation of provisional Republicans fill their elders with disgust because all they want to do is play on the internet. And when any of the remaining groups in Northern Ireland want to actually shoot anybody or make something go boom in a night, they have to bring guys my age out of retirement. Now, this potentially existential character weakness has gotten worse with succeeding generations, and it's been demonically accelerated by the internet, where we become used to instant gratification of our mental and emotional whims coupled with zero impulse control, thanks to distance and anonymity. And that's a bad combination which only makes our sickness worse. Oh, don't get me wrong. We've always been like that ever since I've been around, although I repeat, it has definitely gotten worse over the past 20 years or so. I long ago dubbed this phenomenon the 18-month syndrome. Guys and sometimes gals come into contact with the party or whatever group is involved, in our case, often by reading my Northwest novels, which can show them the cover of the puzzle box, so for the first time they can actually see what the completed picture is supposed to look like, and some of them literally freak out. Then the months drag on, and there's nothing but envelopes in the mail, or these days nothing but internet and YouTubes and people mailing them website links. There's more often than not nobody local they can hang with and say nigger around. They get tired of paying their dues and decide they prefer the 12-pack of beer they've been doing without. You start to get this attitude of, you're not doing nothing. I thought you wanted some action, but you're just a con man. And they wander off to their next stimulus, kind of like clicking the remote on the TV and changing the channel. And by the way, I consider channel surfing and the internet to be a form of addiction. Now, that initial rush of enthusiasm can be really intense. Every year, I get emails and letters from young guys who apparently actually think the NVA exists. And the situation I describe in my novels is real. And they want directions to my house because they tell me they're planning on showing up on my doorstep to be loaded up with weapons and explosives, and then I'm supposed to tell them who to go out and kill. And no, I'm not kidding. And I'm only exaggerating just a little. Now that's scary. And when I explain the realities of life to them, they say, oh, Harold, I thought you were different, but you're just chicken shit like all the rest of them. When are we going to get some action, man? Meaning, when are they going to get some kind of adrenaline rush from marching around with a tiki torch or going out in public wearing funny clothes and LARPing and wearing a football helmet and carrying a shield and waving a stick and acting like you're Conan the whatever you think you are? They wander away, which I suppose is another form of turnover. Now, I know I was talking about short attention spans, but I feel the urge to meander off topic a bit. Surprise, surprise. Apropos of what I just said, I can't help but observe once again that if and when the Northwest Front or someone else were ever to achieve an NVA or provisional IRA type scenario where actual armed insurgency against these loathsome reptiles in Washington and their hired killers was in fact taking place, and when things were being done in the night and no one was getting caught, then I'm fully convinced we would have more volunteers for something like that than we could arm and train. There are still serious white men in this country who will support a movement that's actually doing something. And the knowledge of what has to be done is not just confined to us alone. A few weeks ago, I said that the first white nationalist group to achieve a permanent public presence in the form of live and accessible human beings and not internet will stand on the top of our wee little heap and acquire more or less a monopoly on legal, political, and media activity, and that's true. I will go further. The first white nationalist movement to demonstrate that kind of serious and adult commitment to creating an ethnostate and a new world will create that ethnostate and that new world. It always amazes me how we seem to have no idea at all just how weak and vulnerable our enemies are. I have lived in, shall we say, stressful situations, and I can tell you right now, these people that are ruling us, they couldn't take it. Now, whenever some of us manage to do the old Macbeth trick and screw our courage to the sticking point and get our heads out of our asses and grow up so that we are no longer adolescents of all ages, then the people will be ready. Enough of them, at least, so we can do what basic human decency and honor demand of us. Anyway, never mind me. I'm just babbling again. We were talking about turnover. I suppose if I had to reduce the problem to 25 words or less, I'd say it all boils down to motivation. All too often, it's wrong. Entirely too many people these days get involved with white nationalism because they want to get something out of it, not put something into it. And in the real world, that's not how it's done. White people come into today's internet-based white nationalist movement, and they used to join white nationalist organizations back in the days when there were any, for a variety of reasons. And a lot of those reasons, while humanly understandable, are not the best long-term motivators for revolutionaries. People who join because they want to get something out of it rather than put something into it tend to run out of steam pretty quick, generally about 18 months, give or take. Then they go dark and they wander off. Anger at the many wrongs that Obama's America has done to them personally, okay, that's perfectly understandable, and probably the initial motivator for the majority of people who come looking for us. Given the shithole country we live in, it wouldn't be surprising if a lot of our contacts were not motivated by their own personal experiences with life under political correctness. Now, the trick is to give that anger form and direction, which is where a professionalized party comes in, but we won't get into that this time around. Now, these white people are looking for revenge against Obama world, and yeah, eventually, with the Northwest Front, you'll get it. But the operative word here is eventually, and even then, only after the NF has managed to professionalize. Even the Butler Plan, the only actual plan that white nationalism has, is very much a long-term project. The four phases are outlined in the White Book, but you'll notice that there's no time frame attached to any of them. If tomorrow morning I were to get our short-term goal of a sum of working capital and 6 to 10 fully functional Class A comrades here at my side handed to me on a platter so that we could finally get started at square one, it would still be years before we would see the prize of freedom within our grasp, and I frankly can't see it being achieved without a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Parts of what we're going to have to do are going to be hell on earth for a lot of people, including us, the guys who are doing it. The establishment of the Northwest American Republic will one day be celebrated in song and story and film, and some future Northwest movie director like Kelly Shipman will reduce the whole long agony to 2 hours of inspirational drama. Now, I'm sure there will be some great flicks and TV series that come out of our Northwest War of Independence, and I wish I could be around to see them. But in real life, the creation of a new country is a task involving long, hard, concentrated work. Not to mention immense suffering and the daily risk of torture and death at the hands of the most vile tyranny in human history, a tyranny which seeks to destroy an entire race, our race. Anger and the longing for revenge is hard to sustain through the long years of hard, drudging, impoverishing, and mostly boring scut work that has to be done by members of a revolutionary movement. Now, this isn't a third world military coup where the insurrectionists already have pretty much everything they need in their hands and in place, and it's just a matter of General Valdez driving his tank into the presidential palace. We have to create the whole enchilada from the ground up. Take a bunch of angry and embittered, mostly lazy and immature and timid white boys, adolescents of all ages, and turn them into effective and disciplined political soldiers. Professionalization, people. There are those who can sublimate their desire for revenge against America and develop the kind of dedication, hardihood, and self-discipline that will be required for the long haul. I've known men like that. You know, I probably don't mention this often enough, but down through the years, in addition to all the cranks and lunatics and sad sacks and general undesirables, I have met some of the finest and bravest and most dedicated white men and women living. Here in this wee little movement of ours, and it has been an inestimable honor and privilege. And no, they're not all of my generation, For all my Grandpa Simpson bitching, I see some millennials on the internet who, so near as I can tell, really do have the right stuff. And I hope to be able to meet them someday and get them up and running in a professionalized Northwest Front. But the fact is that if not properly nursed and contained and sustained, mere personal revenge for personal wrongs is not a very good long-term motivation. Few people can really stay angry for 30 years and base a whole career and lifestyle on horrible things that were done to them in their youth. I did, but I'm weird, even by the standards of my own generation. Now, most of my classmates back in 1971 walked out of Chapel Hill High School and never looked back. I didn't, but then I was motivated in my early years, and still am, by my National Socialist faith. And yes, in some respects, I guess it is a kind of a religion. Okay, look, I'm really starting to ramble here. I get that. So I'm going to take a break and do some things that need to be done around here. I'll segue into an Andy Donner rerun that has some tangential connection with the topic at hand. Then after you hear from our regular contributors, I'll be back.
Greetings from Seattle, comrades. Andy Donner here. I'm taking a break from the real politics stuff. I've been busy lately, so that material isn't quite ready. Today, I need to reiterate something Harold said over the last couple of RFNs about the way people interact with the party over the internet. Here's the short version, guys. We can't be your friends. I'm known for being a cold, logical type, but even I cringe a little when I say that. I know how it sounds. I understand it feels to many of you we're just brushing you off. It's not like that at all, but I personally respond to quite a bit of the communication the party receives, and there are trends which require addressing. Okay, look. I get that it sounds like we're just too disinterested to bother replying to people when they contact us. We're not. But most of the things a person needs to know are either on the party website at northwestfront.org, or they're in the White Book. Other subjects have been covered in depth in the Northwest Independence novels we've been telling you all to read. And for the record, we do mean it. You can get the answers you seek in just the same way I did. When I first found the party, I read the whole website and listened to all the radio-free Northwest episodes there were at the time, which, by the by, amounted to a whopping 33 in total. If you're really, really curious what we're all about, go listen to the first 20 or so. If that's too much commitment for you, find the RFN episode that was essentially a two-hour response to common questions. In fact, I'll make sure the link to that episode ends up in today's comments. After that, I got copies of the Northwest Independence novels and read them. Once I realized the Butler Plan is the right thing for me personally, and the rest of the white race collectively, I made it a point to re-listen to the admittedly few by comparison RFN episodes and take the contents to heart as I started my own migration efforts. If you have a question, that's what you need to go about doing. For other things pertinent to Northwest migration, there's the party message board. Some have complained it's not a very active place, and that's true. But conversation there is restricted to, as I said, issues pertaining to Northwest migration and the party in general. You can certainly ask questions there, but they had better be on topic. I get the impression that quite a few of the recent signups were looking for another Stormfront or VNN. Mac and I aren't going to let it go that direction. The reason a person might approach the party, be it over email, message board, or otherwise, is that they're either making their migration or they're looking for friends and entertainment. I, and anyone else associated with the party, we'll make quite a bit of time for answering legitimate questions, but 9 times out of 10, we're going to refer someone to the Q&A RFN episode, the White Book, or the novels. This means, among other things, that an introduction packet must be requested. That, or the 5th edition White Book, and nothing older than the 5th edition White Book, must be ordered from lulu.com. You guys who are curious about the party could get your questions answered by just doing what we're telling you to do. Once all that is dealt with, any remaining questions will probably be legitimately good. And there I go again, accidentally demeaning sincere questions. I repeat, I know how the party sounds when we say things like this, but it's just the reality of the situation. Curiosity is a wonderful thing, guys, but in this case, nearly all of it can be satisfied by just consuming the material we've put out there for precisely that purpose. None of us, even Harold, possesses the time resources to read and answer every single communication we get. To be blunt, most of these communications fall into two categories. The first is when someone worries we don't know about the Jew, or wants to send us something on the internet that just proves it, I tell you, proves it. Those of you who have heard my Real Politics talk on human nature will know that evidence doesn't matter. It's also worth noting that people who reject racism do so on the basis of their dislike for it. Very few people disagree with racism on an intellectual level. The other trend is something I mentioned on RFN in the recent past. So here's another way of looking at it. I totally understand that white nationalists get lonely and benefit from having someone around to whom they may vent. When someone finds the party, it's almost routine for them to dispatch a long, long, long email pouring their heart out. When some of these emailers show signs of potential, and Harold doesn't have the bandwidth to answer them, which is more and more frequent all the time, they're passed along to others who are able to devote time to them. I personally find myself with that sort of time less and less as things progress. As hard a line as I draw on the matter of being someone's e-buddy, I do genuinely worry that their needs aren't being met. But let me repeat the honest-to-God fact of the matter. We can't be your friends. There's nothing wrong with needing to talk to people or get questions answered. But the Northwest Front is first and foremost concerned with creating a fighting revolutionary party in the Pacific Northwest. It's totally human of you to need the affirmation of those like you. But time resources aside, there's another problem. This emotional need, once satiated, creeps up again and again. In short, people need friends. Again, fine. We're not mad at you for that. And in addition to the friend thing, lots of you want to feel like you're involved with the Northwest Front. Here's where this gets dangerous from our perspective. And oddly enough, this isn't an information security or personal risk sort of danger. It's actually a threat to the goal the party has set out to accomplish. We desperately need people here as opposed to on the internet, because nothing will be accomplished without your help offered here, physically in the homeland and in close proximity to other white nationalists. The party cannot allow someone to feel like they're involved when they're really not. If you really do desire the friendship and camaraderie of Northwest nationalists, you'll find nothing but my enthusiastic approval. If you really do desire to be involved in the only remaining chance to save our white race from physical extinction, you'll find nothing but my genuine acceptance. But desire and doing aren't at all the same thing. There are a handful of outlanders, and they know who they are, who offer genuine assistance. The rest of you don't. And as callous as it sounds, allowing outlanders to feel involved would dampen the desire to actually do what they need to do. Here's the thing, guys. Don't feel as though you need to avoid contacting us, and don't at all feel you can't ask questions. Answering these inquiries is a large part of what we do. But, especially on the message board, keep it relevant and on topic. If you're going to talk to us on the message board, please give us a substantial introduction to yourself, since it's required of new members. Friendly reminder, no real names. If you're going to send an email, don't be the guy from England that one night several months ago sent me a dozen or so useless news items. There's one outlander's emails I always open. He's a retired guy I met with a comrade off of the white nationalist email list before I came home, and he knows who he is. I open his stuff because I think he's worth listening to, even when he's just passing something along. Otherwise, the bad news spam and the "you gotta see this video" emails almost always get deleted. Guys, really, I know the party and I come off like total jerks for saying these things, but this actually relates to my Real Politics talks in an important way. The things white nationalists worry themselves with have absolutely nothing to do with securing an existence for our people and a future for white children. If you need to bend our ear, please do. But before you do, make sure it actually serves the Butler plan. All right? Hail victory, comrades.
Okay, I think for our first music break this episode, we're going to get environmentally conscious. This is a kind of a hippy-dippy song about saving the whales, but it's a pretty good piece of music, worth listening to, just in a musical sense. There's one thing. This is an old song that goes back to the late 60s, early 70s. I can't remember exactly when. I remember hearing it long ago, but again, my memory gets a bit foggy when you go that far back. The performance artist is a guy called Country Joe McDonald, And I swear to God, I think he was stoned or drunk or something when he did this, because if you listen to the lyrics, they make sense, but not in the order that he sings the lines. It's like he got them all mixed up and he's actually singing the correct lyrics, but they're not in the right order. Anyway, see what you think.
evening, comrades. Tonight I would like to discuss The Real Right Returns by Dan Freiberg. Now, this book discusses the origins of Arctos Publishing. Arctos was meant to be without the faults of either compromise or reaction. During its formative years, Arctos was based in India, and it was on something of a shoestring budget. But now it has grown, and it is based in Budapest. Arctos wishes to create a new language of discourse. Indeed, this book contains a glossary of relevant terms at the end, and one of these key terms being organic humanism, which encapsulates the interconnected relevance of ethnic identity. The true right wishes to reach a wider audience. They're not about going back to some ideal of recent memory, nor are they about a utopia. Instead, very much like Archeragy, this author looks back to antiquity, like Archeragy, but also like Julius Evola. Also, in something of a counterpoint to that, they don't just want to do things the old way, but they want to be sure to keep relevant. This author believes that the struggle will only be more prevalent in years to come. This book mainly deals with the goings-on in Sweden. In Sweden, conservatism is really on its deathbed, and really the left and the so-called right are very much neutral, and in fact, the right is very weak and also influenced by the left, what they call the right in Sweden. The only thing to do about this lack of choice, is to go back to metapolitics. And this is an approach that goes back to the foundations. And it talks about who has representation and who doesn't, and how this need is supplied. Currently, the European New Right can be traced back to Benoist, whose ideas are really beyond left and right. At this point, it's very important that we try to define this idea of the right and what actually is the right. Well, today, much of what we call the right is really an imposter. In American terms, we might use the term rhino. Today, what often passes for the right is really liberal individualism. And this type of, really this type of liberalism is really what it is. It's very much loyal to the White House and also to Brussels, and it has no conception of identity. The true right has some socialist strains, as it does denote the solidarity of organic groups. This author, being very much a true conservative, dislikes the French Revolution of 1789 and really sees 1914 as the German ideals of order, justice, and solidarity as fighting with individualist French ideas. Now, this author does not take any credit for metapolitics. Indeed, he talks about how metapolitics was developed by a communist by the name of Antonio Gramsci. Gramsci wanted to understand why communism did not come to power in certain bourgeois democracies, and he wrote something called the Prison Notebooks. These are about the connection between culture and politics. When culture changes, certain political truths appear to become self-evident, and they seem inevitable. And when this happens, they are often enacted as law. This idea influenced the left's long march through institutions, and in the course of this, the right was made to sound untenable. And also, too, many befuddled and gullible people were persuaded to buy into alternative and substitute identities. And these identities can be anything from the idea of being a teenager to the concept of being a hippie or an alcoholic, any type of identity that would replace your primary identity. Now, in the course of this, the right has been pressured to clean up its act and become more professional, and we see this both in the States and also in Europe. Today, the public, particularly in Sweden and in some other European countries, can start to see some parliamentary success. But this success was at least 10 years in the making. Now, this author talks about a think tank called Metpol, which has won the respect of both nationalists and leftists, and it's developed an alternative media. Granted, Metpol and other groups like it may be a small minority, but they're very organized and dedicated. This author talks about how the left, particularly in Sweden, is really desperate and how it can only address certain symptoms. I think this is true all over in both the left and also the so-called right, where they really can't get to the meat of the problem. To this author, the problem really began back all the way in, again, 1789, but going on after that, a little by little throughout Europe, when the primal aristocratic culture of Europe was replaced really by a consumer culture. Now, this author, like everyone else, wants to tear down guilt and confusion by using alternative media. And the author again stresses a need for an authentic identity. This author really wants European unity. So unlike Marcus Villinger, who wants to really emphasize the Europe of nations, this author wants unity because he does not want Europe to be a vassal of more powerful entities. Now, this author realizes that elections are only the result of how public opinion has been formed. This author, particularly taking a look at the history of Europe and all the terrible wars and violence that have befallen Europe, this author really is dedicated to nonviolent solutions, much like Archeridge is. This author is talking in particular about Sweden and so discusses something called Expol, which apparently attacks so-called rightists, whether they're true rightists or only perhaps fake rightists, and about how these individuals will often, they may face economic persecution in the form of job loss, and how individuals like this should go to a internet site called righton.net, where they will get practical advice on how to deal with the difficult press, and also will get things like financial assistance if they've had a job loss. This author gives a lot of practical advice about life in general and in specific certain things going on in Sweden. And I always enjoy reading books about what's going on in Europe with the alt-right. So I hope you enjoyed my review. Thank you very much for listening, and hail victory, comrades.
Greetings, comrades. This is the trucker coming at you from Mississippi. I just had to do 3 drops on this last load coming out of California, and I got stuck up or caught up in this winter blast down there in Louisiana. I had a drop in Lafayette and one down there by New Orleans, and got the Lafayette one off okay, but couldn't get down to New Orleans because y'all don't have salt shakers down here. to spread sand and salt on the roads. I guess you don't get much of the freezing weather down here. Well, yeah, once you get up to the homeland, you're going to get a share of it, depending on what part you move to. The sound, we get it occasionally. Sometimes snow and ice storms, sometimes just most of the time a lot of rain. But for the most part, around the Puget Sound area, the temperatures usually stay above freezing. Not always. A lot of times they'll go and drop down below. This last Christmas here, a few weeks back, we had a nice white Christmas, at least at my house. And I'm only about 30 feet above sea level, a few blocks from the water. So, yep, was interesting. Didn't have any getting around problems, but hell, I'm from Michigan, so that doesn't faze me a whole lot. But you down here, well, man, there was all people slipping and sliding all over the place. But if you live down here, which you should be up in the homeland, by the way, you already know about that. One other thing I'm wanting to find out from you southern folk, at least down around the Mississippi and Louisiana area, do you have to go through special education to understand the blacks down here? Man, oh man, they've got some kind of accent, dialect, whatever that, I mean, I've heard ghetto before, but this doesn't even come close to that. So I was just curious, because I ended up having to ask this one receiver 3 times what the hell she said, and she looked at me like I was nuts, that I was screwing with her. Well, I couldn't understand her ass. And so she finally got her point across, but it was one of those, it'd be so nice not to have to deal with them anymore, because this is just beyond comprehension. I mean, I came from Michigan, about an hour or so north of Detroit, and it was an all-white community. Didn't have any beaners or blacks or nothing in the school. It was all white, all the way through from kindergarten and grade school all the way up through high school. And so I didn't have to put up with any of this integration crap that everybody's always talking about. So I guess I'm a spoiled individual. But yeah, this is just nuts. Anyway, so hopefully you guys go and make your scouting, at least your scouting trip this year, and you better be able to go and get it together and get your donations to the cause going so you can help support the movement and all that. It'd be nice if you go and make your move, which you should already have done, but we won't get into that, I guess. All right, well, this is Trucker signing off from Mississippi, getting ready to go and pick up a load going to California. All right, have a safe one, comrades, and hope to see you out there on the road making your scouting trips and your migration soon. Trucker signing off from Mississippi. Greetings, comrades. This is the Trucker coming at you from Anthony, Texas, on the, I believe it is, the end of one distraction season and the beginning of another. What do I mean about that? Well, I'm pretty sure, because I don't pay attention, because I don't watch this shit, this is Super Bowl Sunday, and the best thing I can say about Super Bowl Sunday is it gets millions of you off the road, because you're too busy watching the damn game to be out there traveling, which gives me a lot freer roads to do my job. So, anyway, and it's going to be the beginning of another distraction season that you guys aren't going to be making your migration scouting trips for. Like, oh, the beginning of, you're probably going to be getting your boats or your motorcycles ready for the summer season. And so, yeah, I've got a distraction at home. I haven't had it out in, I don't know, probably at least 5 years. Yep, I've got a two-wheeler at home also. But it's one of those, hey, it's bought, it's paid for, I haven't bothered renewing the insurance or license plates on it, and it hasn't seen the light of day in probably, like I say, about 5 years, I think. Why don't I ride it? Well, I've been doing other shit, like working and trying to help support the cause, even though I am already out there in the homeland, which you should be also, but I guess we won't go there. But, you know, it's one of those, hey, don't feel the need to get it out, waste my time. I've been home when I'm home, do other stuff, working around the house, this and that. But you all go and come fall every Sunday, at least, if not whatever the hell other day of the week it is. They go and you plant your lazy asses on the couch and you yell at a electronic box, because you've got some people running a damn piece of pigskin up and down a manicured field. Well, I know you northern boys You're probably going to be spending the afternoon with one of your other distractions while yelling at that same electronic box, more than likely away from the wife, because that's your only time to do it, is out there fishing in your ice fishing shanties, your little frigid man cave out there on a frozen lake. And you southern boys, they probably don't get that one, but hey, what the hell. Yeah, them people up there in like Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan and other places, North Dakota, South Dakota, the lakes freeze over and they drag their fishing shanties out there, park them out there on a frozen lake, cut a hole in the ice, have their generator out there, have heaters going in there to keep it nice and warm. They got their cold brews out there, and they go fishing, and they have their satellite system out there, and they can go and watch these idiots running up and down that manicured field with big skin. Yeah, well, you can tell what I think about football. Anyway, sorry, I probably pissed a lot of you guys off with that one, but that's just me. Hey, what the hell? So don't listen to me. But, you know, I'm telling the truth. But anyway, okay. Then, like I say, it's going to be, the lakes are going to be melting, and you're going to be getting your boat ready to go, and you're going to be going out there this summer and fishing instead of scouting trip and migration. Or those of you that ride those rumble machines, you're going to be going and polishing the chrome and checking the tires and getting more accessories on your scooter so you can go and make your annual migration to Sturgis. God forbid we should go to the homeland and do a scouting trip, or better yet, migration. But hey, that's what you're going to do. Don't say that you're not, because, well, statistics have proved it. You are, because you haven't. You're more interested in riding that scooter or getting that boat out there on the lake or the river than making a migration that could change your life and your race. So, anyway, okay, well, this is the trucker going on a little rant from Anthony, Texas, on the changing of the distraction season. So, hope you all had a good one. I don't know if your damn football team won the Super Bowl, but whatever. Anyway, I never watched the Super Bowl. I've been in the area of people watching it and try to stay out of the truck stops because the daughter just filled full of yelling males at the TV, and they're off the road, so I can go and be able to truck back and forth across the country easier. Because they're too busy yelling at the stupid box and not out on the road. So, well, I guess there is a good thing about the Super Bowl. It keeps millions of you off the road. All right, well, this is Trucker signing off from Anthony, Texas. And, well, I guess I might see you out there on the road making your scouting trip and migration. But you'll find another distraction to keep you from doing it. So, all right, have a good one, comrades. This is the Trucker signing off from Texas. Way too close to Mexico, but hey, I'll change that in a few hours. All right, have a good one. Take it easy. Hope to see you out there in the homeland soon.
Well, I'm down, 18 wheel rolling. We're going to do what they say can be done. We've got a long way to go. A short time to get there. I'm westbound, just watch old bandit run.
I tell you what, my first music break on this show was Country Joe, and so I just keep on with some 60s hippy-dippy stuff. I tell you, they don't make hippy-dippy like they used to back in the 60s. That was the original. I keep looking to see if I can find some audio of the hippy-dippy weather girl from Laugh-In. Anyway, Jefferson Airplane.
lawless, hideous, dangerous, dirty, violent, and young. We should be together. Come on, all you people standing around. Our lives too fine to let it die. We should be together.
Okay, we were talking about turnover in white nationalism and why it's so incredibly high. Nor is this a recent phenomenon. Back in the day, we were all familiar with group hoppers, people who wandered all over the country, in some cases moving from group to group in an endless search for whatever it was they were looking for. Of course, in some of those cases, it was simple. These people were FBI and other police informers scrounging around for human lives they could destroy to earn their daily crust, and that's still a risk. And by the way, if you're going to be a group hopper, be advised that that behavior still looks very suspicious. Nowadays, white nationalist turnover isn't quite so obvious, since no one I know practices formal membership anymore. We don't have any members like we used to. Today, what we've got is audiences. And like all essentially media people, our success is measured by audience and market share. Now, eventually, maybe the alt-right will have something similar to the Nielsen ratings, which is all very well and good if what you're trying to do is make money off YouTube videos. But as far as any actual political change, sorry, that's just not going to cut it. So bear in mind, when I use the term join and group and member in the modern sense, it's kind of a virtual thing. These expressions are just basically to give a general shape and conceptualization of what I'm talking about. Now, one of the advantages of professionalization would be to recreate actual members of real organizations of human beings. And not just internet media run out of mom's basement or rented rooms in some office park with a couple of computers. Real people who would be organized and placed under political discipline and told to go out into the real world and do things that do not involve electronic screens. And because these would be for real political soldiers, it would get done. An outfit where there are leaders who give orders, not suggestions. But I promised that we wouldn't go into that this time around. Okay, another bad motivation for becoming involved with white nationalism I've noticed to be fairly common, again using the old school term join, is that there are guys who join our groups, especially Hollywood Nazi or Klan groups, because of the media stereotype, not in spite of it. Now, these Nimrods actually believe that we are violent, gun-toting insurgents who live in big, huge rural compounds, God knows how we paid for them, guarded by dogs and young men in homemade uniforms with automatic weapons. They really believe that we are constantly plotting to carry out assorted truck bombings and various acts of James Bond-style supervillainy, and they want in on it. Now, generally, this desire is expressed as, we need action, and, you people are chicken shit, you ain't doing nothing. Now, by the by, you need to remember as well that when somebody comes to you with this, we need action spritz, it could be he's not just an idiot, he's an FBI informer looking to collect a big bonus by sending people to prison for crimes he fabricated. These bonuses can sometimes be as big as 50 or even 100 grand, for real. The informer who framed Matt Hale is alleged to have gotten 50 grand cash over and above his usual $400 a week from the Bureau. And according to various court papers from the appeals process that Dennis Mahon sent me, the female informer who was responsible for his judicial murder got 100 grand plus a whole new identity, relocation, and other perks. Considering what went on in that case, I know the Bureau definitely wants that bitch hidden away out of sight. So, when you have somebody hanging around who won't keep his mouth shut about illegal activity, get away from him quick. Do whatever you need to do to make sure he never comes near you or your family again. Either way, it is deadly dangerous even being in the same room with him or her, especially in this day and age when every cell phone and computer is a potential microphone and recording device. Just as a general rule, leave all the talk and writing and internet about illegality and direct action to me. I'm an old man. I've already pretty much done what I come here to do, and they can't undo it. I don't have any family that they can threaten. Now, the militant talk is my department. You guys keep shtum on that, okay? And I've wandered off topic again. Okay, people joining because of the media stereotype and not in spite of it, right. Back in the day, when I was still what you might call Orthodox NS and I was using the swastika and wearing the costume, we used to get a lot of that. People coming to us who thought we were the boys from Brazil and we had access to secret Nazi gold, which is another myth that won't die. This idea that somewhere there is this big, huge hidden reserve of cash or gold bars or whatever, or else billionaire donors. So why do we keep pestering you for $10 a month? We got people who believed that there was a secret Fourth Reich hidden away in South America or Antarctica someplace. Basically, people who believed that we were who we were portrayed as being in the media and for that reason wanted to join something which had no existence anywhere in the real world. Just like these people today who come to me thinking that they're joining the NVA. So that's another reason for turnover. A right-wing search for Shangri-La. People trying to find something that simply doesn't exist, and when they realize it doesn't exist, they move on. Another reason for turnover, a motivation for coming to white nationalism, looking to get something out of it rather than put something into it, is even more simple, basic, and in a way pathetic. People come to us looking for friends. They have lived all or most of their lives completely isolated in a sea of black, brown, buggery, and political correctness, where letting one wrong word slip in a moment of anger or simple inattention can destroy your life in ways you can't imagine. White people hate being forced to live in fear in a land which was once their own. They hate being isolated and afraid to speak about what is done to them every day in terror of being punished by the men and the bitches in the expensive suits and the carpeted air-conditioned offices. Sometimes it reaches the point where white people question their own sanity, since if no one else will dare admit to seeing and knowing the things that you see and know every day, well, maybe political correctness is right, and the problem is you with your horrible white skin and your dick. It's you who are insane. It's you who are wrong and wicked, because as George Orwell said in 1984, you refuse to make the effort of will necessary to understand that 2 + 2 really equals 5, like Barry and Hillary and that nice Mr. Soros tell you it does. It has been made clear to you that when O'Brien, who is probably some bitch in a Hillary Clinton pantsuit, holds up 4 fingers, you had damned well better see 5. And if you don't, you never, ever let so much as a whisper pass your lips that 2 + 2 just might equal 4. There are millions of white people in this position all across the world, isolated, alone, frozen in amber, unable to make a move, and terrified of being destroyed by the beast in some way. Above all, they are lonely. And they come to us looking for friends, which is among the most comprehensible and tragic and completely wrong of reasons. And it's probably the leading case of the high turnover in white nationalist groups. Okay, I'm starting to run way long, and I could meander on with this for hours, trying to soft soap it and not hurt anybody's feelings, but that's one of the many things I've noticed down through the years doesn't work. You'll either get this or you won't. Look, Lenin said that a revolution is not a tea party. Nor is it. Any revolutionary movement has to use people, to assess them on the basis of what can we get out of this person? How much mileage can we get out of him or her? How much money? How much work? How much reposting of the party website all over the internet? If I send this person leaflets, will they distribute those leaflets or let them lie gathering dust in a cardboard box in his bedroom closet? What skills does this person have that we can use? Can he fix stuff? Computers, cars, what? Does he have access to goods and services the party needs? And can he get us access to those goods and services with little or no money? Is he close enough to be of any use? I mean, you get the idea. I don't want to be your friend. I need you to be my soldier. That doesn't mean that I don't like you or that I hold you in contempt or anything like that. Look, without you guys and thousands more like you down through the years, I couldn't have accomplished what little I have, and I never forget that. But the party doesn't need friends. We need political soldiers. And inevitably, that comes through. So I suspect that's another reason for turnover. Like I said earlier, they come here, and they don't find what they're looking for. Because they're looking for the wrong thing. Now, one of the criticisms I've heard voiced about the late Dr. William Pierce was that he allegedly held his own staff members and donors in rather low regard and too often let it show. One way I heard this expressed is that someone who was in Hillsborough claimed that Dr. Pierce always stayed in his trailer and would never descend to the lower buildings in the compound to bullshit and drink beer and eat pizza or whatever with the guys, or in the person's exact words, quote-unquote, "He will not feast with us." I've often wondered what I could do with something approaching the resources and plant that William Pierce had. And if that situation ever obtains, I think I could bring myself to spend some time down at the bottom of the mountain feasting with my guys. I'd like that, actually. But I also kind of understand where Pierce was coming from. Up on top of that mountain is not the workstation that I would choose, but it was his. And for all my problems with the man, Pierce was a lifer, and even his worst enemies have never questioned his true devotion to his people and his civilization. Those who have been chosen by God or destiny or the great pumpkin or whatever to serve in this manner, understand that this time around, this life we're living now is a work day, not a weekend or a vacation. No Miller time for us this time around, pardon the atrocious pun. A lot of people who come schmoozing around white nationalism will never get that. They think that they're walking into their friendly neighborhood bar to hoist a few cold ones with a gang and say, nigger, nigger, nigger. In fact, they're wandering onto a busy and dangerous factory floor where hard hats and safety gear are required and where they have no place if they're not there to work. So they take a look around, don't like what they see, and skedaddle on out the door. If you're one of those who understands that this time around, it's a work day, get in touch. The Northwest Front is hiring. But our time is up for this week's edition of Radio Free Northwest. This program is brought to you by the Northwest Front, Post Office Box 2188, Bremerton, Washington, 98310. Or you can go to the party's website at www.northwestfront.org. This is Harold Covington, and I'll see you next week. Until then, Sarsha Andaban. Freedom.
Still is beating heart in manhood's morning noon. Who can follow in their footsteps at the rising of the moon? At the rising